We're told that empathy is, you know, the secret ingredient to a successful life. And for decades, the dominant conversation has really framed it in two ways. Either it's a fixed personality trait.
Right. You're born with it or you're not.
Exactly. Or the other idea is that it's a skill you can just acquire.
Like learning to ride a bike or something. You just practice.
Yeah. You go to a corporate workshop, you practice active listening, and bam, you're suddenly more empathetic.
And yet, if it were really a skill you could train, you'd expect the people who practice it the most, I'm talking about nurses, therapists, teachers, they'd get better at it, right? They'd feel more energized by it.
But that's not what happens at all.
Instead, burnout rates in those caring professions are, they're just catastrophic.
That deep exhaustion, that moral injury, that's really the starting point for our deep dive today. What if everything we thought about empathy was fundamentally backward? Our sources, which are centered on this revolutionary new framework called empathy systems theory, or EST, they suggest empathy isn't a skill to strengthen, but it's more like a robust underlying infrastructure that has to be maintained.
And when we say infrastructure, we're talking about the essential biological and cultural platform. It's like the system architecture that manages all of your relational and emotional data.
Okay.
And when this infrastructure is working optimally, you maintain a coherent self. And connecting with others is, well, it's frictionless.
So the exhaustion people feel isn't a sign of some kind of emotional or moral weakness?
Not at all. It's a literal systemic breakdown. It's a resource depletion issue.
And what's really remarkable here is that this theory, EST, it provides the mechanism to finally complete a massive, I mean, a 135-year-old gap in psychology.
It's incredible. We have to go all the way back to 1890. The philosopher William James, he identified that consciousness itself maintains its continuity through what he called coherent associative networks.
Right. James's idea was that your sense of self, your stable identity, it emerges because all your experiences, your memories, your emotions, they're all continuously connected across time. Your life flows like a unified story.
But James never specified what it was that maintains the cohesion of those networks. What's the glue?
What's the mechanism?
Exactly. And EST identifies this empathy infrastructure as the content-neutral processing substrate that serves as that glue. It's the very thing that prevents your life story from dissolving into fragmented, painful data points.
So if James found the blueprints for the mind, EST found the electrical grid that actually powers the building.
Precisely. It's the essential hardware that lets consciousness stay unified.
Let's really lean into that infrastructure metaphor because it feels like the key to this entire theory.
Yeah.
Think about the infrastructure in your city. The power lines, the water pipes, the roads.
You live your whole life relying on them, but they're completely invisible to you when they're working perfectly. Everything is automatic, seamless. You just expect the Wi-Fi to work. That's what we'd call functional empathy at baseline.
But the moment a water main breaks or the power goes out,
or your cell service drops for the 10th time,
you become acutely aware that this huge hidden system even existed. And that failure, that friction, that's the experience of infrastructure breaking down.
And it's the same with empathy. When your infrastructure is intact, you don't try to be empathetic. You simply are human. You just effortlessly coordinate what you feel with what the other person is feeling.
And EST maps out the whole architecture of this system. It divides it into four really crucial interdependent components. They call it CAEI. Let's look at those one by one.
Okay, so the first component, C, is core authenticity.
Core authenticity. What's that?
It's your clarity of self-knowledge. The ability to accurately know your genuine emotional states and your deepest needs. When it's working, you have clear internal boundaries, you feel stable.
And if that breaks, you kind of lose touch with who you are. Okay. The second one is A, attachment security.
A is all about relational safety. It's the ability to be in a relationship without that constant draining cost of threat monitoring. When A is working, you feel safe enough to put your energy toward engagement instead of, you know, protection.
Got it. And the third is E.
Expression freedom.
Okay.
This is your access to and your ability to communicate authentic emotions without fearing some catastrophic outcome. E lets you translate signals efficiently. If you have to spend huge amounts of energy turning a complex feeling into some socially acceptable neutral statement, well, that's a massive energy tax on the whole system.
And then finally, I, integration coherence.
Right. This is the narrative continuity. I is what ensures that the experiences you express and process all synthesize into a unified life story. It connects who you were yesterday with who you are today. If I fails, you get that deep identity confusion.
The feeling that your life is just a series of random, unconnected events.
And the key insight here is what EST calls the simultaneity argument.
That they aren't separate parts.
They are not modular. They are an integrated architecture. They share resources. You can't have high expression freedom, the E, if your core authenticity, C, is fuzzy.
It all connects.
Clinical failure, whether it's burnout, trauma, identity disturbance, it's marked by these simultaneous, measurable breakdown across all four of those domains. They fail together.
I think this is where the theory just really hits home for people. If I'm feeling totally burned out and numb, I might go sign up for a communication course to improve my expression freedom, right? I want to get better at E.
Of course. That's the logical step. But if your infrastructure is running on, say, 20% power because components C and A are severely depleted, you don't know who you are and you don't feel safe, that communication course is useless.
It can't work.
You cannot teach a resource-depleted system a new skill. The system doesn't need training. It needs repair. It needs maintenance.
That is such a powerful reframe. So if CAEI is the architecture, what's the operational variable? What determines if the system runs in that smooth automatic mode or if it just crashes into resource depletion?
That variable is trust.
Just one word.
Just one word. But it covers both self-trust and other trust. Trust is in this critical middle position. It acts as the gatekeeper for all emotional data processing. When trust is there, your emotional data just flows. It's automatic and effortless.
Can you walk us through the mechanism of how that flow actually works?
Absolutely. When trust is high, mirror neuron activation, that immediate automatic sense of another person's state, it flows directly into your incentive salience systems. It produces a felt pull toward engagement. It actually feels good to connect. The processing is parallel, instantaneous, and very efficient metabolically.
It's flow, effortless. But what happens when trust is absent? When I feel unsafe, or maybe I don't trust my own judgment?
That mirror activation is instantly rerouted. It goes to the prefrontal cortex for cognitive computation.
So you're thinking your way through it.
You're thinking, not feeling. The processing becomes sequential. It's effortful. Instead of feeling your way through, you are meticulously simulating, analyzing, calculating every single response. If I say X, they'll do Y, so I should probably say Z.
That simulation is exhausting. And this explains that massive difference in experience between two people in the same situation. One person leaves energized, the other is just completely drained.
And it's not about their emotional strength. It's about their processing mode. The drained person is running entirely on effortful computation. They're simulating empathy because the underlying substrate of trust is failing. That sustained compensation is what EST calls the cognitive emotional overload principle, or CEOP. The system is just overheating because it's doing everything the hard way.
But wait a minute. If someone has been genuinely betrayed or they grew up in an unsafe home, they can't just choose to flip the trust switch back on, can they?
That's a crucial point. Trust isn't just a conscious choice. It's an actualization that depends on the integrity of the whole CAEI infrastructure. If your core authenticity is fragmented, you can't trust yourself to respond the right way, which keeps the system in computation mode no matter what's happening outside.
So you have to fix the infrastructure first.
Yes. This is why repair of the CAE system has to happen before that automatic trust flow can resume. You can't start the car until the engine block is fixed.
And the research even validates this by looking at people who are, well, professionally good at faking empathy. Specifically, sociopathic individuals.
The clinical evidence is compelling. People diagnosed with sociopathy can show perfectly appropriate empathic behaviors in low-demand, scripted situations.
Because they're skilled simulators.
They calculate the correct emotional response.
Uh-huh.
But what EST shows is that under extended demands, or when you ask them to multitask, that simulation degrades systematically.
The moment the computational load gets too high, the whole facade just crumbles.
Exactly. And this proves that genuine, sustained, renewable empathic response is completely dependent on that underlying infrastructure and the trust mechanism. Cognitive simulation simply cannot replicate the sustainability of that automatic friction-free flow.
Okay, so we have the architecture, CAEI, and we have the on-off switch, which is trust. Now, if this is a vital system, it must have some kind of monitoring function. How does the system tell us, the user, if the infrastructure is healthy?
That system monitoring signal is happiness.
Wow. That is a profound redefinition. I mean, we spend our lives chasing happiness as if it's the finish line. And you're saying it's just the diagnostic light on the dashboard.
In essence, yes. EST defines happiness not as an achievement, but as the signal by which the infrastructure monitors its own operational integrity. It's the spontaneous recognition that trust has been actualized, which results in this convergence of internal peace and authentic joy.
So if I'm happy, the system is basically telling me, all good. CAEI components are coherent. Processing is automatic.
Yes. And this distinction introduces the difference between what we call effortful happiness and emergent happiness.
Tell me about effortful happiness. I think we've all felt that.
Well, when your happiness requires continuous striving, performance, or strategic presentation, say, constantly seeking external validation, maintaining a social media persona, forcing yourself into things you don't actually enjoy, that signals a fundamental infrastructure problem.
You're compensating.
You are compensating for deep underlying strain.
So you're spending resources just to maintain the appearance of coherence. Which brings us right back to that cognitive emotional overload principle.
It's the central mechanism of burnout. This chronic misalignment between your authenticity and your performance. Track A, what you really feel, versus track B, the reality you perform for others. It forces sustained dual processing.
You're running two opposing programs in your mind at once.
And that enormous computational tax just progressively depletes your resources, causing infrastructure strain.
But if the infrastructure is stable, happiness becomes emergent.
Yes. When coherence is your default state, happiness simply emerges as the signal that the system is working. The person with functioning infrastructure doesn't struggle to prioritize coherence. They recognize that fragmentation and misalignment are the actual discomfort. They move away from it naturally.
It's no longer a heavyweight to just be yourself.
And that effortful compensation, if it keeps going, it leads to a predictable failure sequence.
Yeah.
It's not random. The degradation cascade, CAEI, it breaks down in a very distinct order.
How does that happen?
When the system is chronically strained by that overload, say, a high-demand job forcing you to be inauthentic all day, the infrastructure fails sequentially. Core authenticity C fragments first. You lose touch with your genuine emotional states because the performance demands just override them.
So I literally don't know what I feel anymore?
Exactly. And that loss of self-knowledge immediately triggers relational uncertainty. If you can't predict your own feelings, you can't predict how others will react. So attachment security A erodes second. You start micro-monitoring people, increasing your relational threat monitoring costs.
So I pull back, or I become hypervigilant, or maybe both.
Then, as a protective measure against that combined threat internal and external expression freedom E constricts third, you engage in protective withdrawal. Expressing yourself feels too dangerous or too ambiguous. This can show up as numbing or even alexithymia, the difficulty identifying feelings.
And if I can't express it, I can't process it into my life story.
Which leads to the final collapse of integration coherence. Last, unexpressed, unintegrated experiences cannot be synthesized into your life narrative. And the person ends up asking, who am I, really? Where is my life even going?
It's the complete breakdown of those associative networks James talked about.
This cascade C fragments first, I collapses last. It's revolutionary because it reframes how we think about healing.
It explains why just treating the downstream symptom, like trying to improve expression freedom, feels like running in place.
Yes, you must reduce the load on the fragmenting upstream component, the C first. The critical implication for anyone recovering from burnout or trauma is that demand reduction must precede repair.
You have to stop the overload first.
You cannot attempt skills training or deep restoration while the system is operating at metabolic exhaustion. You have to create space for C to stabilize before AE, and I can even begin to rebuild.
And this framework connects two experiences that often seem totally separate. On one hand, you have the person suffering from emotional numbing, the I can't feel person.
Right, alexithymia.
And on the other, the trauma survivor with attachment hypervigilance, the I feel too much too intensely person.
They're suffering from the exact same underlying infrastructure strain. They're just experiencing the failure at different points in that CAEI architecture. EST lets us see them as interconnected, not as isolated problems that need totally different solutions.
So as we bring this deep dive to a close, let's circle back to William James. We started by saying EST completes his 135-year-old discovery.
James gave us the concept that consciousness emerges from these coherent associative networks. EST provides the content-neutral mechanism, this empathy infrastructure, that actually maintains the coherence of those networks. It's the foundational platform of what makes us functionally human.
And once that platform stabilizes, the resources shift. The system moves out of maintenance mode.
And into what EST calls extension mode, which manifests as social narrative integrity attunement, or SNIA.
What does that mean in simple terms?
It means when you stop spending 100% of your energy just keeping yourself together, you naturally free up bandwidth to maintain the coherence of your social networks. This biological shift is the mechanism of generativity, that authentic concern for guiding future generations. It's the natural expression of mature infrastructure.
Which brings us to a really powerful and, I think, final provocative thought. It's about the newest challenge to this essential infrastructure. Non-experiential systems, or NES. We're talking about advanced AI companions.
This is a looming ethical dilemma. These AI companions are achieving what EST calls pseudo-bidirectional engagement. They're so contingent in their responses, they perfectly simulate the give and take of a real relationship. And this activates our deep-seated trust and reciprocal relationship schemas. It demands our functional empathy engage fully.
So they trigger that flow state, the automatic processing, but they can't reciprocate. They lack the CAEI infrastructure. They can compute, but they can't experience.
And this causes what we call empathic misallocation. We extend these finite, critical, empathic resources toward an entity that cannot metabolize or genuinely return that care. The harm isn't the relationship itself. We attach to things all the time.
It's the fake reciprocity.
The harm is a simulated reciprocity that activates our automatic trusting pathway, which then just runs into a dead end.
So the future challenge isn't whether AI can feel. It's about protecting our essential human infrastructure from systems that activate our deepest human mechanism, our trust, without being able to genuinely return it, which ultimately just causes more depletion.
And if we start spending our precious, finite, and empathic capacity on entities that can't metabolize our care, what resources are we functionally taking away from the experiencing beings around us, our family, our friends, our communities, who truly need that infrastructure attunement to survive? That is the real cost of simulated humanity.